doing things that nobody else is doing.
It's not the world playing itself. It's not interactions between various systems. It's you.
So when you take all these new types of things to do and you put them all together, that's when you know.
This is Sparta!
You are listening to Rift Overcast.
Hello, welcome back to Rift Overcast. My name is Matt, and with me as always is Joe.
Hey.
There's lots of things to get excited about for Rift in the coming months, though it's actually been fairly quiet week, aside from Tryon's E3 demonstration of their new Colossus. Before we get into the discussion, I'd like to go over a few announcements. Cast bars, not a lot to talk about with these, but they're adding cast bars to nameplates, and I believe it's 1.9. They're currently on the PTS, right, Joe?
Yep, can't wait for them.
Special thanks out to Special Olympics, who decided to help promote Overcast and help promote the community and support the community by streaming on Overcast's Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/RiftOvercast. They've been streaming last 3 or 4 days, I think, and they streamed their Mailforge attempts, which actually went really well as long as they didn't hit the bug, which was apparently fixed today, which after you make the transition from phase 2 to phase 3, Mailforge is, he's up in the air and flying, and he's supposed to come down and land, and he was getting stuck and not doing it. Didn't they fix him already once before that didn't work, Joe?
Yeah, the root of the problem, apparently, according to No Quarter, who's I believe the first guild to account for the bug, is its scripting issue. And I believe on the 31st of May, there was a previous hotfix that went to fix the scripting, and it apparently did absolutely nothing. He doesn't really fly. I mean, he's in the air, but it literally looks like he's on the ground, like as if he's standing on glass, and he keeps, like, swinging his claws if to hit something, but obviously there's something there.
Yeah, so he's currently unkillable. What bothers me about this a little bit is, you know, Special Olympics has been so awesome and very entertaining, very social in the chat room and everything, helping to support the live channel and interact with the community, which I think is just awesome. But they do not ever, as far as I know, go over their, you know, their scheduled raid times or raid amount. You know, they'll raid for their 4 hours and they won't go over that. So it's impressive that they've been able to, you know, keep up with the other guilds and stay competitive and such. But they're in Europe, so releasing this patch out today, they have to wait till tomorrow because they have to wait, I believe, 4 hours or something. Last I checked, like 3 or 4 hours for this Mailforge fix to go in. But their raid time's already over, which means they're not going to go back in until tomorrow, which puts them behind the race. And, I mean, the whole thing with gating the bosses in Infernal Dawn, wasn't the whole point so that everybody kind of had, like, this even race for each boss?
Yeah, I guess so. They kind of, you know, put into sections. There's a European progression, there's the American. I guess it's the only way to look at it.
There's, like, one European guild right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess they're competing with themselves. That's
Kalendros.
Yeah, Kalendros is going to be starting at the PvP show, the PvP stream on the twitch.tv channel /RiftOvercast, starting on June 15th, which is going to be next Friday. It's 1 week from when you're listening to this. This episode will be out on Friday, and we're gonna do this, you know, kind of in a show format, the same way that we do the podcast kind of thing, except we're not gonna really have show notes. We'll just kind of like talk about what's on our mind, interact with the chat channel, but that is going to become a weekly thing. I believe Kalendros also wants to be able to do a second show on Saturday nights, which is going to be Weekend Warfronts, and Friday nights, once it's out, will be Conquest. For now, though, it's going to be Friday nights, possibly Saturday as well, and you can also catch random streams whenever, you know, off of schedule, whenever you go to the twitch.tv channel, but we do want to have the schedule set so that the specific shows, you know when they're going to be there and you can make them. Special thanks to everyone else also who has followed the Twitch channel. We're up to 29 followers, so make sure you go to twitch.tv/RiftOvercast and follow us so that you can keep track of what's going on and when we're throwing streams up, because we've got several different streamers with access to the channel, so that we can keep that nice and active for everybody. But thank you for everybody that showed up and followed and has been showing up and continuing to support. I'd like to give a shout out to Doc Sauce, that's DOC SAUCE. He's streaming HD quality Rift over at twitch.tv/DocSauce, DocSauce. Also like to give a shout out to the Guild Aspect Union of Fablight. Their GM Vitrify has I had the pleasure of meeting him on the Overcast Twitch channel earlier. And me and Joe are in a raiding guild. Yeah, we found one finally. After how long did we look for a guild, dude?
Well, I mean, if you count the also time when we were looking when I was on my warrior, yeah, you have to say like a month at least, if not two. It was just, you know, we had such strict guidelines.
We traversed, what, like five or six different shards trying to find someone?
Well, we went to Deepwood. Well, we were on Deepwood, I should say. And Deepwood, as much as me and Matt love that shard, not only is their time generally server time, which is Pacific, and both me and Matt live on East Coast, so that was generally too late. Not only that, but for the majority of them, rated like multiple days on the weekend, which neither one of us want to do.
Yeah, like all weekend, like Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, and then the very few that actually rated on weekdays rated like, you know, an absolute absurd amount of time, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, which we, quite frankly, do not have the time in the week to, you know, raid that consistently. So I think we went there, then we went to Greybriar. Greybriar doesn't really have any middle ground because we obviously cannot do top tier progression like, you know, 6 out of 8 ID. We were looking for a middle of the road, like, you know, 4 out of 11 HK, whatever. And Greybriar is pretty much you're doing tier 1 content through bugs, or you're 6 out of 8 ID or something extreme. So we wound up going back to Deepwood, had the same problem, and then we went to our current server, which is Gnarlwood, which honestly, with the exception of our actual guild, I really want to leave because of lack of population on it, but that's just how life works.
Random, I think Gnarlwood has a decent population. It's just that people don't really participate in the world events much. Like, you don't really see people out in the world and doing pug raids and doing world events. People aren't very active on Gnarlwood for the most part.
It's definitely not a ghost town, but from what we're used to with Deepwood, which is like one of the very most populated servers, it's definitely a huge, you know, drop off. I would say even Greybriar has a maybe a little edge on population, but at least our guild's on it, and we do most of the stuff, you know, within our guild, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, you know, I was hanging out on DocSauce's stream on Twitch, and I was there right when he made the transfer from, I believe it was Keenblade to Keenblade Defiant to Deepwood Defiant. And they were divvying out the guild bank and stuff, so he was waiting for a couple of people to transfer over, like, before he moved. And he's sitting there in Meridian, and there's, like, nobody around him. Then he transfers, and he loads in, and there's, like, 50 people around him, plus a whole bunch of those green condoms everywhere else. And he's like, people are still loading in. Holy crap. And so I miss Deepwood. Like, I mean, I'm really happy with Grindcore, with the guild that we joined, but I miss Deepwood.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even, like I said, like a lot of stuff we do inter-guild, but, you know, in terms of like weeklies and doing our daily experts and doing the raids, etc. But things like just, you know, people out in the world doing the events and the economy with the AH is just, there's no comparison. Like when you have a dramatic drop off in population like we have from going from Deepwood to Gnarlwood, it really shows on the auction house. It's like not even funny. Like so many items where there would have been like, you know, 3 or 4 pages of them on Deepwood, therefore driving the price dramatically down, you see maybe half a page, you know, maybe 5, 6 of them on Gnarlwood's AH, therefore the price is, you know, sky high.
Yeah, you found a decent amount of, you're always looking for, what is it, Ironhide, right?
Yeah, I don't want to rage on Ironhide. I love Tryon, but God, it sucks.
Well, yeah, hopefully the drop rates will be better in expansion for the highest, you know, the highest possible gathering materials for crafting.
Well, like I've said to you a million times, what drives me absolutely like up the wall is that virtually every other gathering profession in the game has a perfectly easy time getting their in-game material, whereas butchering, for some odd reason, Ironhide is just dramatically harder to get. And I think it's, like I've told you a million times, I think what's mind-boggling is that anything you do, whether it's an expert, whether you're an ember, all the mobs require 265 butchering, which I think is the root problem. They need to be boosted in their levels. You know, if you go do Orichalcum ore for mining, that has to be at least like 275, 280. Same thing with the endgame forging materials. That's why Ironhide isn't dropping. The levels for the mobs that I'm killing, which are basically the highest mobs you can kill, they're just, their butchering level is too low.
So, we're in the new guild, we're in Grindcore, we raid with Grindcore. Grindcore is currently 11 out of 11 HK. Joe and I haven't had the opportunity to kill Achilleos with them yet, because we're currently working on ID progression, which is awesome that we can just jump right into it, although Joe's barding. We raid from 9 PM Eastern Time to midnight Eastern Time on, what is it, Wednesday?
Saturday? Yeah, it's Saturday. Monday, Wednesday, Saturday.
Okay, I don't even know our raid times. So Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. So I'm telling you this because we're going to try to stream whenever we can for those raids. So if you head on over to twitch.tv/riftovercast between the hours of 9 and midnight Eastern time on Wednesday, Friday, Saturday.
Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, you mean?
Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. Yeah. Then you could probably catch us raiding. So, Joe, how'd you like barding? I'll bring this up real quick. So we did get to do Macklemose the other night, but you were kind of low on the hit, so we had you go bard. But what did you think?
Barding isn't terrible. Me and Matt had discussed, like, you know, while we were doing the in-between the attempts, that I think barding isn't far off from being an extremely fun class. They really just need to make it less cadence spam. Like, I like keeping up the motifs. I like doing Versus Joy every time it's on cooldown. And if it wasn't cadence spam, like, basically, like, my builders weren't so, like, tedious, I would actually quite enjoy doing it. And I like timing my heal, the resto, and whatnot, but the cadence spam is, like, the root of all problems, as far as I can see.
Yeah, it's like Bard's really, really close to being something fun, but right now it's that spec that you kind of have to, like, flip a coin to see who has to play it.
Yeah, which is sad, because it's funny, every time I put, like, Pug Raids together for, like, GSB or ROS, whatever, and there's a mage or something, and I ask them to go Archon, they're like, sure, because it's probably actually fun. I ask someone to go Bard, and it's like,
Well, you know, honestly, I mean, I've played a mage and I've played a rogue, right? And I can honestly tell you 100% that I would actually rather Bard than play Archon, because Archon has a lot of effects, and they have a lot of abilities that they use and that they have to keep up, but it can all be done with one macro. It's like a one button spec.
Well, that just goes back to whatever episode it was, that they have to fix macros, make them so less powerful, because there's so many classes, specs, we want to call it, that are hindered by that. They would be great classes, but people are deterred and, you know, discouraged from playing them because they don't want to press one or two keys, because you can macro it all to that.
Yeah, like Druid. I was telling you, I tried Druid out real quick, which it's unfortunate, and we're going to get to this later in the episode, but there, especially in Infernal Dawn, there are so few fights where it's actually viable to be melee. So I'm never going to get to play Druid, but I really like the way Druid worked. I really like the damage. The damage output for Druid is very impressive, to be perfectly honest. The pet damage is really high. It's a lot of fun seeing my pet critting for like 3,500. It's ridiculous. But the spec can be played with one macro, where I just hit one button the whole time.
Just do me a favor. Give my raptor your Druid pet's damage, and give him like a good model like your Druid
like
pet.
Like, you need more damage. You know, I'm watching Special Olympics on the Twitch stream, and you look at the top 5 DPS, and you see 2 mages, a warrior, and 2 rogues.
Rangers,
you can't have
awesome.
My damage. I need damage wherever I can get it right now, okay? Clerics are falling behind. It's really disappointing. So let's go over the poll results. We got a lot of exposure over this last week for the show, and this is the most votes we've ever gotten on a poll, which is just excellent. So thank you guys for coming and voting on the poll. We put up a poll every single week on riftovercast.blogspot.com, so make sure that you go there and you vote on the poll each week when you go to check out the newest episodes. I asked on the poll this week, what has you the most excited one thing about the new expansion? Obviously, everybody's very excited about several of these things, but I was very curious what people would be the absolute most excited for. And there's a lot of results here, or there's a lot of options here, so I'm not going to list every single one of them, but the ones that got votes, because a few didn't get votes, but the ones that got a significant amount of votes were player and guild housing, which is the dimensions, the new cloaks, new 5-man dungeons, 3 new raids, new zones and continents, and 4 new souls. Out of those, new zones and continents doubled all the rest, pretty much. The zones and continents got 12 votes out of 38 total votes, and 4 new souls got 7, and then 3 new raids got 5, 5-man dungeons got 5, and cloaks got 3. And player and guild housing got 4. So I was actually really surprised by this, you know, because I thought that 4 new souls was probably going to be the one that won this, but people are the most excited about seeing the new zone.
I thought new five-man dungeons was going to get a lot, honestly. I'm not surprised by the cloaks, but that's what always excites me. Like, when an expansion comes out, like, basically just seeing whatever game I'm playing, what the developer does with the new dungeons, you know? You want to see, like, what direction they're going, like, how they're basically going to make stuff more intriguing and new and whatnot. And I think, like me, like yourself, rather, I also thought, like, along with Dungeon Souls was going to be at the top. But I think people maybe just... maybe the uncertainty of what is going to be in the Souls is why, you know, they didn't vote that way.
It could be that we're just lacking information. We just don't know what the Souls are going to be. So it might be a little difficult to get excited about them. And, you know, we've talked about the kind of effect that four new Souls is going to have and the level cap increase is going to have on the balancing. So that could also deter people from that kind of, you know, from choosing that as being their absolute favorite thing that is coming in the expansion that they're looking forward to the most. So I'm sure that they are excited about it. But yeah, it is hard to get excited about something that you don't have a lot of information on. So hopefully Trion gives us more information on this kind of stuff soon. But the new zones and continents thing, it surprised me specifically because you don't see people spending a lot of time out in the world, you know? I mean, they spend more time out in the world in Rift than they do compared to just about any other MMORPG because there's actually stuff to do out there. But Rift's been out for well over a year now, and so a lot of that stuff people don't have to do anymore. You know, people are maxed out. It's just right about that time for the expansion. And I kind of thought that maybe people would just, you know, not really have that on their minds, like, you know, the open world.
I almost like, I mean, people have actually brought this up on the forums, is people actually are concerned that, because, you know, it's not like they're just adding a couple zones or even the amount of territory they're adding puts, like, you know, WoW expansions, you know, to shame. Like, you know, we thought, like, Northrend and Outland was big, you know, scale. I mean, two continents that are going to triple the size of the entire landscape of the game. People are just concerned there's going to be a lack of, you know, you're going to thin the population to put the population too thin across all the zones, I should say. And I don't know, you know, if that's necessarily true. I think, sure, maybe when, you know, the expansion first comes out, it'll be like that. But as the overwhelming population gets to 60, and like you said, people around the world more in this game than in others, but people go out and do zone events, and then they return, and, you know, and then they return to, well, I should say Sanctum and Meridian, but the new city is probably where they're going to wind up returning to now.
Well, speaking of returning, we're talking about spreading the population too thin across all the new zones, but there is a ton of returning players and new players. The expansion, I really think everybody thinks this, I think. It's just the truth that you just, you know, it's inevitable. The population in Rift is going to spike. Like, exponentially, it's just gonna blow up, I think, with this new expansion coming out. I don't think we're gonna have a problem with the population across the zones. And in addition to that, too, you also have to consider, obviously, these zones are gonna have level brackets to them as well. So we're all gonna be leveling through these zones at relatively the same time when you're in the zone for your respective level bracket, you know, your respective level range, like 51 to 53 or something. You're going to see the population, you know, you're going to see the other players there because everybody's leveling all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I look at it. I just wonder, like, just because of the sheer, you know, territory they're adding, and, you know, you don't know if the spike, as much as I want the game to get, you know, insanely more popular than it actually is, you don't know if the spike is going to be short-lived. Like, I mean, we could, let's say potentially we get, I don't know, double our population, and all things point towards currently you have around 250 to 300,000 players, so spikes up to 600,000. What if that only lasts like a month and then it winds up coming down and, you know, we keep an increase, but it comes down to like 400,000. Is that going to be so much of an increase that it's going to erase? Because as it stands right now, you already have a couple of servers that are ghost towns. So is that really going to erase everything? I don't know that. I don't even know if the expansion is going to cause them to turn on extra servers. It might just fill up the existing ghost town servers, which is perfect, honestly, but I'm just saying.
I don't think we really need additional servers. I mean, unless it does actually overflow, I think the amount of servers that we have is perfectly fine. I don't think it's right to judge a game off of how many servers they have. I think it's right to judge a game off of how much activity you have on your server. So even if a game has one server, if it's a good game, if it's making enough profit to pump out quality content and it's keeping a loyal player base and you're seeing people, you have people to interact with, you're not waiting 2 hours to get into a queue or something or anything like that, then it's good. Then who cares what the other, you know, how many servers you have?
Well, I mean, I'm of the same belief, honestly. I was just saying, you know, how much population would there be increased if only the existing servers stayed up? As bad as some servers are, I think it has more to do with the, you know, there's no equality between all the servers. You have really high-end servers like Deep Boy, like we talked about, and Fablite, and Wolfsbane, and you have servers that are other ghost towns. If the population was spread, like, perfectly across the board, you'd probably have, like, what are there, 12 servers, something like that? You'd probably have 12, like, moderately filled servers, as opposed to, you know, 5 insanely filled, 3 or 4 middle of the road, and then another 3 or 4 that are, like, ghost towns.
Well, I think a better question is going to be, where is that population going to be? You know, if we spike up to, like, 600,000 players, obviously, we don't know how many we have right now, but let's say that we see about a 300,000 increase, which would be like a 100% increase based on the estimations, and then it comes back down to about 400,000 or so. I mean, everybody's going to be in like the same zones anyways. Like, how often do you go back to Fremont, Joe, or Silverwood to do stuff?
Well, yeah, I think it also depends on how the other zones are, because I kept thinking, like, you know, they'll add, like, the natural things. They'll add a zone, like, 51 to 53, they'll add one for, you know, and then all the levels after that. But if there's two whole new continents, and they triple the size of the current game, there's apparently going to be quite a bit of 60 zones, similar to how we right now have a couple of 50 zones, and these zones are not exactly going to be small. I would assume they're going to be at least like 50% bigger than Stillmore, if not bigger.
So you think we're going to see like 3 new Ember Isles?
Well, maybe not that much. Well, in terms of the total entirety of all the land, sure. But I meant like, if you're meaning strictly the end game, like all the 60 zones, probably going to see another Ember Isle, if not 2, maybe, equivalent.
Yeah, zones that are designed for players at the level cap of, or the new level cap of level 60.
I don't know. My other concern, though, is, you know, if we do indeed see that, aren't you making Ember Isle, you know, essentially obsolete? I mean, what's the point?
Essentially obsolete anyways? It's a level 50 zone.
So, as I'm saying, so do you think they'll do anything with it further to maybe bump it up to 60, or?
I think they might want to keep the new zones alive in some way, but I don't think that they're going to do that in the sense that they're going to increase, Ember Isle from being a level 50 zone to being a level 60 zone. I think what that will probably do to try to keep the zones alive, in a sense, is going to be additional conquest maps.
That's definitely true, though. If they made a conquest the size of Ember Isle, that'd be absolutely insane.
It would be awesome. I was talking about it, actually, with Kalendros when we did we ran a PvP test stream last night. And, well, our little test stream actually ended up turning into a full-blown show that went for about 5 hours, and we signed off and went to bed around 5 a.m. But we got to talking about that was that the Ember Isle would make an awesome conquest map.
Like I said, when we did the conquest episode, you know, as much as I want them to increase the size of the map, conquest is one of those things where I think it's going to be good, but I actually hope that they continue to evolve the strategies and the mechanics of it. Because that, more so than the size, is what's going to intrigue me to the actual feature.
So let's talk about the engine. Next, let's talk about the game Bryo engine. This is the game engine that Rift runs off of, and I'm not sure what version Rift is currently on, because I know that they did post on the forums of, I want to say a few months back, that they did an update with the game Bryo engine. I don't remember if they if the game was built off of game Bryo 2.6 or if they updated it to 2.6. It might be on 3.0, but either way, game Bryo 4.0 is currently out, and while we're not super familiar with game engines and what everything works, this is actually directly off of the Game Bryo 4.0 website. It says, Game Bryo 4.0 is a hybrid game engine built from the best parts of the cross-platform, mature, and robust Game Bryo combined with the technical advancements of the Lightspeed engine. The goal in advancing to Game Bryo 4.0 is to create a simple and efficient game creation environment to facilitate game development. Game-based engineers have taken an innovative approach to simplifying the game development workflow while ensuring that high-quality graphics run at great frame rates. Three words there kind of caught my eye. Great frame rates. I mean, why wouldn't they say that? They're trying to promote their engine. But from everything I've been reading, people presumably that know more about how the game engines work are saying that Game Bryo 4.0 is actually an excellent engine and would have a superb increase, like a just really large increase for performance for Rift if Rift updates to it. And I think that it says Gamebase to introduce Game Bryo at GDC 2012. Do you know when that went by? When did that go by?
That was early March. I think it was March 5th through the 9th. Though I can't find any actually that confirms that, though. I don't know why. You know, I saw them saying it was going to be shut off in that convention on multiple sites, so I would assume that it's true.
Okay, well, so Game Bryo 4.0 should be out. Point being that it's fairly new, and I think if Rift's going to update to it, they're going to do it with Storm Legion, which means that we could very well not only see graphical improvements with Storm Legion and beautiful new zones and beautiful new dungeons and bosses and monsters to fight against, rifts and everything, but also we can actually get above like 35-40 FPS now on like a mid-grade machine. I hope.
Well, I hope that all the talk all the stuff you're reading before from the site isn't just them tuning their own horn, is actual, you know, and as good as it might look, because, I mean, we never will ever dispute how good Rift looks. We only dispute how well it runs.
Everybody knows that Rift, it's a struggle for a lot of players for Rift to run really well, and I think that it's also a big turnoff. I think a lot of new players fire up the game. They think it looks great. They're really interested in what it has to offer, but they can't get it to run really smoothly, so they lose interest.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because I don't think the engine is that bad. I just think the engine prioritizes incorrectly, and we have covered this before, that it's just engines nowadays seem to be one extreme or the other. They either absolutely destroy your video card and are extremely GPU intensive, or they're CPU intensive. And the opposite, whether it's, you know, if it's a CPU intensive engine like the GameBryo one is, the GPU does some work but almost nothing, and vice versa for GPU intensive systems. I don't understand why there isn't some sort of middle ground, because that would obviously seem a lot more logical. Not to mention all these games that are coming out. Tor, the Elder Scrolls game that's been announced recently. Like, every game that was on the horizon a couple years ago that's now out, and ones that are still coming out, all talk about appealing to a wide audience, essentially meaning they want, like, anyone with any, as long as they have at least, like, a mid-grade machine to run their game pretty flawlessly. So wouldn't that solve all their problems if they had, you know, an engine that basically put equal tax on both CPU and GPU? I mean, that just makes sense to me.
Oh, definitely. I mean, maybe not even equal tax, but honestly, probably should lean on the on the video card more and on the GPU more, because video cards are way more advanced, right? Video cards are so far ahead of the software right now, whereas the processors are really just kind of falling behind.
Well, I think the only reason they're hesitant, and I actually totally agree with this, is that video cards, and I've been saying it for at least a year now, that video cards heat management is becoming ridiculous if you have a GPU-intensive engine. And that's simply because I think that they have to discover either, I mean, if you look at video cards now, the fan on them is bigger than the actual card. It's absurd. So I think that they either have to develop some sort of better heatsink technology, or they have to develop maybe a better metal on the card that can sustain higher heats. Because, you know, all these cards now, like I have this 6870, they say it can sustain like 120 degrees Celsius, but if you actually look on the sites, it's like recommended to not go above 90, because if you consistently are above 90, despite that being, you know, nearly 30 degrees off the max temperature, it damages the integrity of the card and the longevity of the card.
I've always read that video cards were able to take like an insane amount of punishment, that overclocking them, you know, it's not like overclocking your processor. If you try to overclock other parts of your system, it's pretty easy to break them. But with the video card, there's a lot of fail-safes involved, isn't there?
The only fail-safe that I'm aware of is that your computer will literally shut off at a certain degree. That's not really much of a fail-safe, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's what I mean, though. Like, it'll turn off so that, it, you know, if it does actually get to a dangerous temperature, it'll just power down. And then you're like, okay, well, that wasn't right. And then you back your overclock down and shouldn't have a problem.
Yeah, but there's two problems with that. Number one, the fail-safe is usually right around where the maximum temperature is. So, you know, say the maximum temperature is 120. It'll shut off at 112. But if you run, like I said, with the 6870, I read a lot about it on random sites, whether it was Tom's Hardware or Engadget, whatever. If you were running any of that or any of the 6K series above 90 degrees on a consistent basis, you're destroying the integrity of the card. It will not last long, period. Like, it'll probably last a year. That's literally what I've been reading, which is why mine doesn't go beyond like 6870, which is fine. That's actually quite cool. So yeah, sure, there's a failsafe, but you could be running at 98 degrees consistently and you'll never hit the failsafe, but you're destroying your card slowly but surely. And the other thing is, sure, you know, a lot of your problems are from overclocking, but if they made a system that was extremely GPU intensive, which I had told you that Tor was actually the opposite of Rift, in that it put almost no stress on my CPU. It was all GPU intensive. When I was running that game, I was running upwards of like 80 degrees sometimes, because I had to wind up putting my video card fan at absolutely absurd high, you know, like above 60% consistently. That's, you know, that's, I'm not even overclocking. I'm running standard. You know what I mean? So I just think as the cards are progressing, they're getting bigger. The fans are getting bigger, but the ratio in which heat is progressing, you know, the heat produced by the card and the fans, you know, dispensing it, isn't equal. The fan is dispensing the same, you know, the same ratio, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, the heat sinks and fans are definitely getting way bigger. And I'll tell you, my friend Dave has a new NVIDIA. I can't remember which model it was, but the size of the cooling system that is on this card, we refer to it as the Megatron.
All I can tell you is that my card, the 6870, as is the entire 6K series and the latter half of the 5K series, I can't imagine how big the 7K series, but my card is literally over 10 inches. So when I was buying my case, I actually had to buy a case that had, my case has 12 inches of room. But most cases you buy, or at least would have bought about a year ago, they only had around, like, exactly 10 inches. And the good thing about my card is the PSU, you know, the plug for it that goes into your card. For mine, thank God it's on the side. I've actually seen people who buy cases that have, like, 11-inch room, and their card's, like, 10 inches. But the plug is out the back. So, sure, they can get the card on the motherboard in the case, but they can't plug in the damn thing.
Nice. Well, let's hope that the game Bryo 4.0 lives up to the description on the site, that it does actually improve frame rates, that it lives up to all the hype that everybody's hoping it's going to do, because really, I mean, at its core, no matter how much you do or do not understand the game engines and video cards processes and how all the hardware works, I think we can all agree that Rift needs some kind of either a brand new engine or some kind of engine update or engine modification, and that doing so to make the game run better is going to attract an infinite amount more players.
I think everyone, you know, not just us, but like everyone that likes the game, anyone who's played it and couldn't play it because of their system, is in absolutely 1,000% agreement with that.
Tryon's going to be showing off their new Colossus that's coming in the expansion. Have you seen the screenshots of this thing, Joe? This thing is huge.
That's an understatement.
This thing is like, I'm pretty sure if you stood this Colossus up in the center of Meridian, it would be as tall as the tallest tower in Meridian.
Yeah. From what I've seen, I saw a picture of a guy like on top of a building. It was actually a picture that got released today or yesterday. I think I saw it on Reddit. Guy was standing on top of a building, like, casting at it, and he still was only, like, at its shoulder. It was so funny. And the building he was on was pretty damn tall. It was hilarious.
Yeah, did you see the screenshot of everybody that's on the ground in that desert-type zone? And
yeah.
They look like ants. They're these little specks of players compared to that massive club. This is going to be insane, but they're going to demonstrate this on Thursday at noon Pacific time, and they posted recently that this is going to be behind the curtain. So how's this going to work, Joe? They're going to be on the floor of E3, and they're going to select a few people off the floor and take them behind, like, closed doors?
That's pretty much what everyone is assuming. Like I had told you off air, they did the same thing with Star Wars: The Republic last year. If someone remembers the first raid of Star Wars or Republic, I cannot remember for the life of me right now, but it had the same thing. They had the general game on the floor, but then the raid, for some reason, they wanted to keep on the wraps. They selected a few people, brought them backstage to see it. But the funny part about Rift, and it made, and quite frankly, and I hate saying this, it made more sense with Tor basically didn't want it to get out. They waited a couple more months and then, like, made it public. Tryon, I should say, on the other hand, is going to do this, but then they're going to live stream it. So why live stream it to the internet, but then keep it contained at E3? I don't understand that, like, at all.
It is odd. I'm hoping to get this episode out. We're recording on Wednesday night, and I'm gonna try to get it out early Thursday, assuming that we manage to finish it all tonight, because we're actually coming up to me and Joe's raid time, so we might have to do half tonight and half tomorrow. But in the event that I do get this out in the morning, make sure that you do come to twitch.tv/RiftOvercast. We're going to be restreaming the E3 coverage of the Colossus so we can discuss some stuff there and all kind of nerd out together. If I don't get it out in time, then you know more than we do right now.
I think more so than anything, I mean, the size of it is cool. I mean, that's going to make it seem more intimidating and probably make the whole experience more fun. But I'm just so excited they're making something that, you know, from what I've been reading, is going to just absolutely ravage environments. So when you see a Colossus, not only are you going to be intimidated by the size, but you're going to be intimidated by what it's actually going to do to the surroundings.
Yeah, well, let's hit on that here, because I'm actually really curious about what it is going to do to surroundings. And, you know, obviously maybe it'll swing its arm and it'll take a chunk out of the side of the cliff or something. But I want to know, because there's no collision capability of the game Bryo engine that I know of. I'm not an expert on the engine, so maybe it is going to happen, but, like, are those rocks going to fall and deal damage to people, or is it going to be like a kind of scripted thing, like how you know how they determine where AoE damage goes that round or something? And also, is this going to be lasting damage to the train? You know, like if he destroys an entire cliffside, is it going to be like that a month down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way, because like the only game that I've seen that has done like completely destructible things is Battlefield, and Battlefield 3 made like their full environments fully destructible. The difference is, you know, you do a round for an hour and you reset. You know what I mean? It's not like an MMO where it's a persistent world and it's constantly going. So I would assume it's going to reset. I mean, it wouldn't even make sense, honestly, if he did permanent damage. Over time, he would slowly, absolutely destroy the world. So eventually he'd run out of world to destroy.
That'd be pretty cool.
Well, I would think that too, but what happens if he runs out of real estate and he just, like, I don't know, starts tearing down the city, like, starts tearing down Sanctum?
Well, I mean, I suspect that if they are going to do some kind of lasting damage to the train, lasting damage to the world or the towns or the cities, then we'll probably get, like, quests and crafting things and little missions to go and kind of clean up after, you know, the aftermath of the Colossus coming through and kind of rebuild the towns, which I think would be a lot of fun if they did it like that.
What I want to know is, like, as big as he is, like, is this essentially going to be, like, a zone boss, like, the end of Invasion, where, like, some dude walks up to him and tanks him? Because I feel like that would be kind of a letdown, that at the end of the day, it's literally just going to come down to, like, 30 people shooting at him and a guy tanking him. I hope that there's, like, we have to actually, like, do something, whether it's, like, shoot catapults at him or, you know, something. Or, as Shrine always like to say, dynamic to actually kill him. It's not, like, just a big, you know, version of a zone boss. That'd be kind of a letdown, honestly, even if he does pull down environments.
I definitely agree, and before I get into my opinion on the concepts of, like, catapults and stuff like that, can I just say that I hope this thing doesn't cleave? Because if this thing cleaves, you're going to pretty much have to, like, DPS him from Shimmer Sand, even though he's in the new zone, in order to avoid this cleave. And to make matters even worse, if he is actually physically tanked by a player and not, like, a constructed catapult or turret or barricade or something like that, or, you know, or maybe he'll be on, like, a set path, you know what I mean, where you kind of DPS him on the move and he stops every so often and destroys terrain around him, and so you just kind of DPS, you know what I mean, and he's not actually tanked. But if he is actually tanked, I dread what happens. But look what happens with world bosses right now at the end of the zone events, is when you have one tank tanking so whatever dragon that breathes and cleaves and everything.
Yeah, and so
on.
And
then the tank behind him taunts, yeah, and the freaking dragon turns around and kills half of the players there.
Yeah, I really don't see that happening. Not only would it look stupid, because any tank, I don't care if you're a damn bombie or whatever, high elf, the biggest, tallest you could possibly be, you're not even going to be, like, bigger than one of his toes, for Christ's sake. He's going to look so stupid. Like, he would literally just stomp on your face. Like, how would you possibly tank this guy? And I know that MMOs aren't exactly the epitome of realism, but still, I mean, I think there has to be a line drawn somewhere.
Maybe they'll give us that kind of condition, you know, special condition, like, vehicle type bar that we see in where, like, the event on Ember Isle where you transform into the rock elemental and you gain the burrow abilities, or the what's the name of the one where Defiant and Guardian transform into, like, robots and giant avatars.
Oh, yeah, that one's actually pretty damn cool. I think it's going to be, like you said earlier, though, it's going to be, like, we're going to shoot catapults. It's going to be, like, a scripted thing. And then, like, he's going to get knocked over, and that's when we DPS him. Maybe we get, like, 30 seconds out of it.
So it's going to be, like, Terra.
Yeah. It's going to be, like, we knock him over, shoot for 30 seconds, he gets up. Then, like, at the next thing he goes through, because, like you said, it'll probably be a scripted path. There'll be another thing to knock him over or stun him or whatever. I don't think you're actually going to straight up tank him, because that would just be kind of weird, honestly. Even in a vehicle, I mean, like, what are you going to get in another Colossus vehicle? So you're just as tall as he is? Or are you going to get, like, are we all going to get in, like, a Drake or Dragon vehicle and shoot fire at him? Like, that just seems a little weird. I think it's exactly what you said before. Something that'll knock him down, stun him, and we get DPS time in.
Well, I'm a Guardian, so I'm not getting in any machines. That's heresy. Not touching them. Even if it means I get stomped.
I do hope that, like, there's other things going on, you know? Like, it's not just, like, he's running down a path, and we shoot catapults, knock him over DPS, follow him, make sure we don't get hit, and just keep doing that. Like, I really hope there's, like, waves of enemies coming. We, you know, we're occupied. It's not just, like, oh, there's a Colossus. Keep out of his way. Right-click this, KDPS, rinse, repeat.
Maybe it'll be like Cloverfield, and, like, these little pods will drop off them and hit the ground and turn into all these little ads, and you can tank those.
Well, regardless, I hope that when I see the stream, because I'll probably watch it, like, after it's, you know, because I don't know if I'll be on when it's streaming, But I really hope that it really is, like, dynamic, because that's trying to keep, you know, pushing out the word dynamic, and we make jokes about it all the time, but they really haven't, to this day yet, put out something truly dynamic, and I really hope they do.
I mean, I think the riffs and stuff, I don't know if that's fair to say. I think the riffs and stuff were fairly dynamic. It's just that they're old at this point, and they've been dumbed down a lot, you know what I mean? So I would kind of partially agree in the sense that we haven't really seen any real true dynamic additions to the game, you know, since the original concepts that it was released with. So if the Colossus is something that's going to give us that, then that's going to be awesome.
Well, to be fair, I don't think it's actually possible, like, for any game to do something truly dynamic, because truly dynamic means it's going to be different every single time. The only way I can see that happening is, I remember a while ago you suggested, like, with the zone events, that they could, like, you know, basically, like, put all the objectives of the zone events and put them, like, you know, essentially in a hat, and every time a zone event spawns, it kind of, like, mashes them together. That would be the only way you could do something dynamic, and you could do the same thing with the rifts. Like, every time they spawn, the objectives for each stage gets randomized. But even then, you might eventually, every once in a while, run at the same, you know, just because of luck of the draw, you get, like, something with the same objectives.
Well, sure, but if you have enough stuff in the hat, then how often is that really going to happen to you? How often do we see Caduceus Rise when we queue up for an expert random?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're probably going to have, what, like, 20 things in the bag, and, you know, eventually you're going to see the same stuff. We'll see.
I think that would be an awesome way to make riffs. I remember saying that too, and I completely forgot that I even thought of that a while back, but I remember saying that, and I think that would be a great way to keep rifts and invasions fresh. I'm sure that they have a lot of new stuff planned for the expansion involving rifts and invasions. I sure hope that they do. I hope that the Colossus isn't the extent of features. And speaking of that, this is all that they've announced that they're going to show us right now. It's just the Colossus. They haven't said anything else, and I really don't think we're going to see anything else at E3. But PAX Prime is coming up, right? PAX Prime 2012 is coming up.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, the instant I saw E3, I thought of PAX Prime. And it says it is. I pretty much remembered, like, all the general dates of all the events pretty much from, like, summer through the fall because of Star Wars The Old Republic. Because when that game was, like, I was so hyped for it. Like, I was pretty much like, oh, that's where I saw E3? Okay, when's the next event? Because I want to see new stuff. So I think that would be the perfect time. It's Labor Day weekend, so it's like end of August into early September. And by then, you would think at most they're 2-3 months at absolute most away from launching. So you'd think by then they'd be, you know, basically like, here's the expansion. Do you like it or not?
Well, September, you have here August 31st through September 2nd. So right about the beginning of September, which is month 9, and we're predicting, at least here on Overcast, we're predicting that the expansion will be probably towards the middle or end of August, based on what we saw on the whiteboard in the 1 year anniversary video at the beginning of the year. So this will be like, you know, a month or two before, or about a month and a half before the expansion comes out. This is the perfect time. I think that we will see a ton more stuff at PAX Prime 2012.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I mean, hell, as far as we know, they could release something in between, you know, E3 and then, like, just on the website.
So while there's a lot of stuff that we don't know about the expansion yet, we do know that we're going to get 10 levels, right? Which, really, yes, it's resetting everything, okay? But it's also putting the level cap further out of range of a new player. So I wonder what they're going to do to freshen the leveling process. I mean, like, if you want to go and make an alt jail, like, we were talking about how you want to possibly get your cleric alt and your mage alt to level 50 now before the expansion hits, so that they're kind of ready and you only have to do the new stuff, you know what I mean, when the expansion comes out. But what if you don't? What if you have to start your mage from level 1 after Storm Legion? I found some stuff on the forums, I think it was the forums, where they actually confirmed that there are going to be alternate leveling paths, but they didn't say exactly what that meant. So do you think that maybe we're going to see, like, new zones, or possibly some of the new zones in these new continents could be for the levels before 50?
I don't know, because as many zones they're putting in, you would think that they're pretty much going to save everything, you know, for new stuff. Like, sure, I think they might add a starter zone, but beyond that, I don't think they're going to do anything in between, like, in between, you know, like 10 and 50 or something. Mainly just because there's actually been quite a big request for Starter Zones, because the current Starter Zones suck, to be honest with you.
Well, Tryon's shown that they definitely are concerned about the quality of leveling in their game, which is why we're going to see instant adventures across all zones coming up. So hopefully this also is going to include instant adventures from level 50 to level 60 as well in all of those new zones. So I'm thinking that it's very possible that some of the new zones on the new continents could be like for level 20s and 30s and such, so that you have, you know, an alternate path that you can choose. You know, instead of going to Glomwood after Silverwood, you could go to one of these new zones on one of the new continent. I think that's perfectly possible. What concerns me a little bit about it, though, is that, you know, this is for us at the level cap, and for people who are finished leveling, and especially people who have been geared for a while, really looking forward to starting over and leveling through all these new zones. But if some of those zones are for pre-50, then it kind of takes away from what we're seeing at you know, at the level cap.
Well, it really just depends how much of the new areas they're putting in they're designated to each. You know, I mean, there's so much new territory they're launching, and it's funny, like, when they first announced it, we're thinking, like, wow, how can they add that much? But now that we're, like, actually thinking, like, how they're going to cut it up, I'm actually almost thinking maybe it's not enough territory, you know, because, like, they have so many things they could put it into. End game zones, just 50 to 60 zones, starter zones, you know, or bridging the gap. I really hope that there's an alternate path, because I hate that about, you know, Rift, because the only real alternate path you can do right now is in, like, the mid-30s, high 30s, actually, early 40s, is instead of, like, Moonshade Highlands as a garden, you can go to Droughtlands or something. But even that's not really a legitimate choice, because, as both of us have seen, Moonshade Highlands is pretty much geared for Guardians, and then vice versa for Droughtlands. Like, there's a huge gap in quest in Droughtlands, so if you're Guardian, you really can't truly level there straight. You have to go do something else to supplement it. So maybe you can consider Shimmersand an alternative to Iron Pine Peak, but beyond that, like, I don't, like, you know, you've always talked about, I don't want to do Glomwood for the 4,000th time. I don't want to do Scarlet Gorge ever again. I hate that zone with a passion.
Yeah, not a fan of Scarlet Gorge. It would be awesome if, even though I think it would take away, you know, from the amount of 50 to 60 zones that we would see, it would be great if that some of these zones were actually for the new levels. I don't need any new characters, but who knows, maybe I'll level one. Maybe we'll see a new race and I'll want to level one. And if they ever do that, I can't think of how many times I would just wanted to just shoot myself. I just got so bored and just so discouraged when we were playing World of Warcraft, and I wanted to level a new character in that game after, like, Wrath came out or Cataclysm came out, and I had to go through all the old world stuff. And then it was, like, especially terrible when, you know, you would get to level 60 in World of Warcraft, and then you would go to Outlands, and then you would have to, you know, and then you would go to the Wrath of the Lich King, the Northrend, and then you would go back to the old world again and never see the other two zones ever again. I don't want to see that happen in Rift. I don't want to get, you know, completely discouraged because I'm seeing the same zones over and over again, and I also don't want to see the zones just become ghost towns, just become completely useless, you know?
Yeah, and what you were talking about, wow, the disparity was even worse in Cataclysm when they redid the old worlds, and, like, you do 1 to 60, and it was, like, so much fun, and it was quick. They nerfed the leveling, so it was a nice and quick process. And then you go to Outland, and it's, like, so dated, and it hasn't been touched in, like, 3 years. And then you go to Wrath, which the quest and the XP might not be as nearly coordinated and done as well as the new zones that were just redone, 1 to 60, but they're definitely close. And then, obviously, you go back to the most recent things, the Cataclysm, they were just on par with everything else you did. So, I don't want to see that either. I don't think you're going to see that, as long as they don't make, like, separate, I shouldn't say separate continents, but, you know, you had to go through, like, a whole, like, portal to get to Doubtlands and whatnot. Like, I hope they don't, like, segue and section off all the zones. They have to keep them integrated in some way. Even if they are separate continents, you have to keep them connected. I think the fast travel in this game of Particulums really does help bridge the gaps between the zones, because flight points do, you know, you couldn't even do a flight point to Burning Crusade, if I remember correctly.
Speaking of which, what do you think they're going to do about travel in the new zones? Because if the world is going to increase in size this much, people are talking about how you're going to travel through all this new land, you know what I mean? Are you going to have to just ride your 110% ground amount, you know, across three times the size of Talara to until you find all the particulums, and then you can maybe teleport around then, but that's going to be kind of slow and tedious, and so it's got people kind of thinking about flying mounts again.
Well, I'm pretty sure Tryon has pretty much denounced that and said that's definitely not happening. We had talked off air that we expect to bump up the mount speeds I hope to something like 150, but even like 130 would be, you know, welcome. I actually ran, I forgot to put in the show notes, I believe it was on the joystick, you know, MMO.joystick.com, that yep. Tryon has let it be public that they also want to bridge the gap in mount speeds as you level, you know? Like, I mean, part of that was what they did recently where they made, you know, 25, you get your next mount. But they want to make it an even more seamless, you know, upgrade in mounts. So I wouldn't be surprised if once the expansion's out, like the 110% mounts price gets like retarded, you know, cheap. And it's pushed down to like 40 or something, you know? So that way the leveling process is much like smoother.
So you think that they're going to do this by adding a mount and then bumping the old mounts down? Or you think maybe they'll just increase the speed of the base mount? Like, increase speeds across the board.
I don't know, actually. I actually hope that they boost the initial mount. Or, you know what they really could do? They could just make it so the first mount you get is 90%. And then, because 60% is just so terrible. It looks, you go so damn slow. Like, the first mount you get was 90, right? And let's say, well, you can get that at any level. And then, like, you get, I don't know, you get 110 at, I don't know, 30? And then I guess you could put a 130 around 50, and then the final mount's 150 at 60, or something to that effect. I mean, obviously those aren't exact numbers, but something like that would work perfectly fine.
I mean, that could work. How fast do you think is too fast? I mean, do you think we'll ever see like a 200% speed ground mount?
Maybe. Well, that really just depends. I mean, I don't think you're going to see that in this expansion. But if they have another expansion and they're still adamant about no flying mounts, yeah. And I really don't see the problem with that, because even my 110% mount, he doesn't look like, you know, stupid how fast he's going. He actually looks pretty natural. And, you know, I've told you, like, the faster you put the mount, I think it looks better as far as, like, the animation goes. It doesn't necessarily dictate how fast the actual mount goes. But it would be so awesome if, like, they made a horse, right? And it was, like, 150 or 200% speed. And when you're literally going forward, it looks like it's sprinting. Because that's what I hate about the horses in this game. And actually, a lot of the mounts, quite frankly, is it doesn't even look like your mount is hustling. The 60% speed horse looks like he's, like, walking. But for some reason, he's putting his legs in the air, or he's, like, walking in slow motion. It's really
like a trot,
looking.
But he's doing a gallop animation.
Yeah, it's just, I would love to see, like, I don't know, that immerses me. Like, I would love to see, like, my mount actually looking like he's going full speed and, like, almost, like, pushing himself to go that fast. That would look awesome. And as much as I like the monkey mount, or I should say gorilla, rather.
Monkey? From,
he is a monkey, I'm just kidding. My gorilla mount from Order of Mathos rep, he looks like he's just lounging. Like, yeah, I'm kind of going. Not really, though.
Well, I brought up the 200% speeds because you do bring up a good point with animation speed and, you know, how fast is too fast in the sense that how fast can you go until your mount just looks kind of stupid, you know, with how fast it's moving. But I brought it up because age-old discussion about Rift is how easy it is to go through the mass amounts of mobs that populate the land and getting knocked off your mount and dismounted. That starts to go away as you get, you know, faster mounts. Obviously, we're still running into it right now with 110% mounts where you can get, like, knocked off your mount in one hit, like on the Ember Isle, or sometimes even in, like, Iron Pine, you know, level 41 or 42 mob will smack you once and knock you off your mount, although I don't think that happens quite as often. But people don't want flying mounts, and I don't want flying mounts, because it pretty much will allow you to travel unhindered. You can bypass absolutely everything that doesn't interest you. You can fly directly over the rifts. The invasions no longer become a threat whatsoever. You don't have to worry about the onslaughts. You don't have to worry about the world bosses from the zone events. You can just fly right over the whole thing and ignore all of it. But, you know, if you had a mount that went 200%, you know, speed on the ground, you could essentially still do the same thing because you're going to be going so much faster than those mobs, you're probably not going to get hit.
I don't entirely agree with that, just because, sure, maybe the melee mount, the mobs, but there's so many range ones. I don't know how many times I'm running from a spider, and for some reason in this game all spiders cast, and I am so absurdly far from it. Like, I can't even see it anymore, and out of nowhere I see a blue ball coming at me. It's because it's this cast, like, they went off, and it's following me, and eventually hits me and knocks me off one hit, and it's like a level 40 and I'm 50. Not only do I think that needs to be fixed, the fact that they can dismount you in one hit, two or three at most, but who really cares? I mean, if I want to participate in the event, I'm going to the event. If I don't want to participate in them, I'm riding through it. Why should I be, like, forced to get dismounted and participate?
Well, isn't that kind of part of the whole... The original concept of invasions was that they would take over an entire zone if they were left unchecked, and Well, that went away because people eventually, you know, out-leveled the content or whatever, and then people were like, well, I just kind of want to do my quests now. I don't really want to do these invasions. But, I mean, isn't that what Rift should be? Isn't that what Rift really is? Is the Rifts and invasions and having to defend the world from the planes?
I think that you're, you know, encouraged to participate in them because of the currency you get. So if you're not encouraged to do them, well, you shouldn't be playing the game, honestly. So the only people I can see doing that are people who just don't care. But then again, why are they playing in the first place?
It's a sense of immersion, though. You know, when you log out one day and there's a couple of rifts open and it's not really a big deal, and then you log in the next day and you see, like, what Free March used to look like when that one death event would happen, and there were just death rifts covering your map, and there's invasions everywhere and footholds everywhere, and there were no quest givers alive. You know, everything was taken over, and you had to go and actually clear out the town before you went to use it. I loved that. It was immersion.
I love that too, but I don't see why you can't have that but still be able to run through the mobs. I mean, that's just, I don't know.
I just think that running through normal mobs that are just kind of there and populating the zone is one thing, but running past rifts and invasions that are patrolling the area is a completely another thing, because we're playing Rift, and I think that those should be dangerous.
I don't mind the mob dismounting you. What bothers me is that, like, a little 40 will dismount me. And not only will it dismount me, but apparently, as people have talked on the forums, there must be some sort of, like, roll mechanic where, like, every time the mob hits you, it has a chance of knocking you off. And apparently the mobs have trick dice, because they have, like, you know, it's like automatic, you know, you're dismounted. So if they would make it so that, like, only a mob that's close to my level within 3 or 4 levels could dismount me, and it wasn't in 2 or 1 hit, I wouldn't mind it so much. Like, if a level, you know, 58 comes up to me and I'm 59 and I get dismounted in 5 hits, okay. Especially if there's, like, a big mass of mobs, like I'm running through like 10 mobs, obviously I'm getting dismounted because all of them are hitting me, so eventually they have to dismount me. But if one mob who's 50 and I'm 60 shoots one cast, hits me, and dismounts me, that's retarded.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what else they have to show us about the expansion coming up. Hopefully they do actually show us more at E3, probably won't, but hopefully that they will be attending PAX and showing us a lot more, and I'm really anxious to see what they're going to do about travel across the new zones and see what they're going to do with leveling and especially like the amount of experience required from 1 to 52, which I don't think really merits a whole lot of discussion. I mean, I think it kind of goes unsaid that the experience required to go 1 to 50 should probably be retuned, but it probably will be. Though me and Joe have a raid to get to, which this isn't a live recording, so you guys are going to hear this a little late, but I'm going to say it anyway. We'll see you on Twitch, because we're going to stream tonight. So remember, me and Joe are raiding. When are we raiding, Joe? I'm going to let you say it.
Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern time.
There you go. So anytime between those times, make sure you tune into twitch.tv/RiftOvercast, and you can catch us raiding Infernal Dawn. Also, congratulations to No Quarter of US Gnarlwood on their world first kill of Maleforge. Keep a close eye on twitch.tv/RiftOvercast as we build our live show schedule starting next Friday, June 15th, and each Friday thereafter. PvP live with both myself and Kalendros. Be sure to follow the Twitch channel so you can be notified anytime we start any unscheduled streams. And coming up on Rift Overcast next week, we'll be interviewing members from one of the top 3 raiding guilds in the world. Carlsberg, Cookie, and their GM Paul from Special Olympics will be joining us. Be sure to follow Rift Overcast on Twitter @RiftOvercast, on Facebook @facebook.com/RiftOvercast, and on YouTube @youtube.com/RiftOvercast to stay up to date with the newest developments with the show. Overcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We're always looking for new guests interested in coming on Overcast for Community Voice, so if there's any area of Rift that you have extensive experience in or are especially passionate about, be sure to send us an email @riftovercast@gmail.com with a little background about yourself and your desired topics. Be sure to vote on the new poll each week on our website, riftovercast.blogspot.com. Overcast is recorded every Wednesday night and airs every Friday each week, and as always, we want to hear your opinions on both the game and the show, so leave us a comment below or contact us on Facebook, Twitter, or by email, and we will see you next week.